arrive or there is another plan. And we will waiting to see what is the result of this visit. If Netanyahu coming to meet Trump here in the United States next week, what is the plan? How this will impact them?
Yeah. Ziad, how do people get in touch with you, get in touch with Mecca, learn more about what's going on?
Yeah, the people, they can go to our website, meccaforpeace.org, and they can learn about the work we are doing. We are still working, and now actually we are working in full capacity in the ground with all the relief from water, from the food distribution, our kitchen aid, clinics. We are still working there in very strong way, and people, they can come and support. At the same time, people, they can learn about solidarity movement here, what they have in the program, by going back, going to the ARAC, the Arab Resource and Organizing Center, within in San Francisco, or the Palestinian Youth Movement here in Bay Area, Jewish Voice for Peace. They can learn about the activities and solidarity activities here in Bay Area.
Thank you, Ziad. We always appreciate the very important information that you share with us that we get around the corporate mainstream, which has censored this story all the way through. So thank you so much for the time. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Dennis.
All right. Stay safe, Ziad. We'll talk to you soon.
You are tuned to listener-supported community radio, KBOO Portland.
Earth angel, will you be mine?
Hey, KBOO listeners. Join us at the station on February 7th from 6 to 10 p.m. for Stupid KBOOPID, First Friday Arts Walk. Enjoy art. Listen to music, savor drinks, get your face painted, and pick up a Valentine's Day gift from one of our amazing vendors. There's something for everyone. We can't wait to see you. Wink, wink.
Earth angel, the one I adore.
Here we go again, it's the game we love.
Play game.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, KBOO Community Radio, and this is Winner's Bias, America's first, best, and only board game radio show.
Until proven otherwise.
A show about board games and fiddling with the little bitty clicky bits in front of you. I was really afraid I was going to stumble over that, and I'm so proud of myself for not doing that. I'm your host, Nate, and with me is my buddy, James. How are you doing, James?
I am doing good, thank you. It's cold, it's slippery, but I am good.
Great. As a reminder, you can comment on our show live using the OLARC messaging system of kboo.org. Just click on the chat button in the lower right corner of the window. We're talking today with Bert Huig, who is calling from Hood River. He is the founder of the Columbia Gorge board game group out there, and Bert has also demoed games for publishers at conventions and been a judge for gaming tournaments. And we're hoping that Bert's hearing everything we're saying and is going to be able to chime in. How are you doing, Bert? Welcome to Winner's Bias.
I am great, and then I heard everything that you guys said.
Fantastic. Hey, the technology works. This is our first call-in, so thank you for... thank you for being the guinea pig here.
The first live call-in, let's put that there.
Absolutely. I love being guinea pigs for games amongst, you know, real-world technology issues, too. So
great. Just to start, how and when did you get into the board game hobby?
Yeah. When I was a kid, I played all the mass-market games, right? Your Parker Brothers, your Milton Bradley games. Grew up playing... you know, careers, life, Monopoly, et cetera, et cetera. But it wasn't until after I graduated from college and I started judging tournaments for World of Warcraft trading card game, published by Cryptozoic Entertainment at the time, that I really got into hobby gaming. After World of Warcraft kind of went away, I started diving into other publishers and also just the world of board gaming at that time was still relatively new to me. But I just liked heavier games. I liked the sort of TCG style games, and from there, I've always, because I've enjoyed games of all ilks in the past, I just dived into all kinds of mechanics, et cetera, et cetera.
Sorry, real quick, and could you define TCG style games for us?
Yeah. So trading card games are games like Magic the Gathering, or like the game that I was playing and judging at the time. I was traveling around the country to help judge was World of Warcraft, the trading card game. And that is a styled game such that, you know, you buy packs of cards and you're building a deck in order to face off against typically one other opponent. In World of Warcraft, you certainly did. And there's an extensive set of rules to follow that one has to decipher for edge case situations whenever, you know, some type of interaction happens that might not be super clear, which is where the judges come in. I happened to be in a place where the friend of mine who got me into World of Warcraft was a head judge over the entirety of some of these tournaments. So he's very much into the rules, and that kind of got me interested into the rules as well. So that's how I got my start really into hobby gaming. Soon after I started working for, working as a contractor for a board game publisher, Renegade Game Studios. And Renegade Game Studios formed in, I think, 2014 it was, and I was part of their first demo team, going to Gen Con, going to Origins, and helping set up their booths, giving demos of their games at the time to Gen Con goers and to other visitors. And really, from there, it just kind of exploded. I very much enjoy things like demoing games and developing community, which is ultimately why I sort of started this Hoodiver board game group as well. It's just developing community around the Gorge area.
All right, we're going to pick back up on all of that, on like the judging and the conventions. But I wanted to ask, you said you like heavy games. What was like the heavy board game that sucked you into the hobby that got you playing them?
that's an amazingly easy one. I really enjoyed the game Alchemists. It is a Euro game where it is a deduction game. And the whole point of Alchemists is you're trying to figure out the potions that someone else is making. And from there, there's so many, it's also very colorful. The artwork for a lot of games that I enjoy tends to be very colorful, very bright, but also just very, very brain burnery as well. I think Nate's used that term in the past on the show, but just requires quite a bit of thought, a lot of planning, and that's really the game for me that I thought I need more of this in my life.
Great. And you mentioned after college you kind of exploded in the hobby, but like, how did you find your initial groups? Was it just friends you had met in college? And especially like, if you do like heavier games, how do you find friends that are into what you're into?
Yeah, I did have friends in college who played games like so Alchemist. My hobby gaming experience didn't really start until after college. So really, it wasn't until after I'm originally from California, and it wasn't until I moved to the Northwest that I really found a group of individuals who really liked heavier games. And even the way that the game group started, we typically don't play the heavier games, the heavier Euros that I would normally play in the game group. However, I have found individuals over the course of time, and almost through just having more individuals or knowing more individuals who like to play games and introducing more and more people into the hobby, that you start off with a lighter game, and then I'll kind of try out, okay, well, if you like this one, let's see if you like this other one here. And from there, I just kind of found individuals that would like to play heavier games. The group itself didn't start off as anything huge. I didn't have a vision to necessarily, you know, start off a group and have it be as, frankly, as popular as it is right now. I'll talk about that in a little bit, but it used to be just th- three or four of us pretty regularly, meeting on a weekly basis, and we'd be at one of the restaurants around the river. We'd sit down, we'd play a board game, and that was that. It's become quite a bit more of an event at this point.
Yeah, and real quick on the heavier games thing, I know exactly what you're talking about. I have a friend who has been getting into train games, the 18XX genre. I was just talking with James about that. Mm-hmm. And so, like, I've been slowly dabbling into that, and it's like, when I first started gaming, it seemed like a world away from anything I would ever be doing, and now I'm, like, dabbling in that. So it's just, you just need that one friend to be like, hey, let's try this. And just be open to it if you want, and you can move on.
Yeah, absolutely. In the game group that I've co-founded, typically we'll play. I don't know how familiar your listeners are with the BGG scale, for example, but I'd say we tend to be on the lighter side to maybe medium side. So on the complexity scale, it's like the 1.5 to maybe 3.0 at the highest, typically. Occasionally, I'll get individuals to play, somewhere around the 3.5 era, 3.5 complexity scale. But for the most part, the group is just, the whole point of the group is really just for inclusivity, and the heavier Euros in general, I would say, make it harder for that to happen, just because the rules overhead for that is generally quite a bit higher. So we try to have games that have good strategic depth, but without the rules overhead that a lot of the heavy Euros I like tend to have.
So you said you start out new people with the lighter games, which is obviously the best way to go. Do you have a go-to lighter game that you usually bring people in?
Oh, absolutely. I really enjoy a game called Lanterns. Lanterns is published by Renegade Game Studios, and it is a game where you're laying tiles into a pond, and there's several different draws with lanterns. It's not a hard game to learn. There's good strategic depth. It's extremely colorful, so it has great table presence as far as being able to draw individuals in just based on aesthetics alone. I've also taught it quite a bit just over my time when I was doing demos for Renegade, and also I think it's a fantastic game.
It sounds like a very relaxing game as well. Just placing tiles on a pond sounds very idyllic.
Yeah, it is that, and I don't want to make I don't want to introduce a game to individuals that are necessarily warlike as one of their first games if they first come to an event, That said, I do like the area control type of games as well. There's not too many games that I actually don't like in my history of playing hobby board gaming.
Great. So why don't you tell us a little about Columbia Gorge Board Game Group, and also what drives you specifically to organize a board game meetup group for other people? Obviously, some of the history you've told us about, those skill sets sort of lend themselves to you running a group. But yeah, why don't you just tell us a little bit about that?
So the Columbia Gorge Board Game Group has been an entity may be too strong a word, for about 8 years. During those early years, there were three or four of us that really just got together to play games. And the group itself is a reference to a Facebook group that we have, and you can find us on Facebook at Columbia Gorge Board Games. But over the course of the past, I'd say, 8 years, we've expanded from a group of three or four regular game players to now, I'd say, we average probably well over 20, 25 players on a regular basis. We have several different locations throughout the gorge. So not only do we meet in Hood River, but we also meet at the Brick City and Games in the Dalles, which just recently kicked off, very, very recently, actually, just this past year in 2024. My big draw for hosting board game nights and organizing these events really is because I like to provide an inclusive space for individuals who like board gaming in the gorge. A lot of people, when they think of Hood River, they think outdoor activities. They think, a lot of hiking, and Hood River is a mecca for those types of activities. I take part in some of those activities, mountain biking, But there's certainly a place for indoor activities, and I'd like to be able to provide that space. And it gives me a lot of joy, I guess we could say, in order to be able to provide that space for someone who may not be quite into the outdoors, and who are still looking for community, obviously, and live in the Hood River area, and just giving them some place that they can feel like they belong. That's really my big draw for creating the creating and maintaining and organizing the group. We've had a long time member who is moving out of country. This actually just happened yesterday, and we kind of chipped in to give him a parting board game gift as he's moving out of country. And you know, it's one of those things where it felt right to me to do it. I know I didn't have to, but it's part of that sense of community. They're part of the family of the Gorge that I'd like to try to create and provide that environment for.
That's all very sweet, and it just sounds like a lovely community you have built up and still building it. How many new faces do you usually get, like maybe from week to week or in general?
Sure. You know, it's been interesting to to kind of see it grow, because up until the end of 2024, I'd say we were probably averaging about maybe 10 heads. So that was at the height near the end of 2024. And then a random Reddit thread, subreddit, was posted. And I don't typically use Reddit, but I was over at a friend's house, and my friend mentioned to me that there's a subreddit on there's a Hood River subreddit that exists, and someone was asking about board game meetups. And my friend told me about it. I hopped on the subreddit. I answered. And then from there, I think we got maybe 10 more members, actually. So really, I try to take the time when new faces come to meet and greet with them. And I want to make sure that they feel like it's not a an exclusive environment. Try to make sure that we get to play a game that if they don't want to play a game, even, you know, that they can just sit and watch or sit and observe. So I've had some of the individuals like that, just to see what happens, you know, at a game night. And and really, by the time the first day that they arrive passes, they're already playing with everyone else, and they're already kind of enjoying and having a good time. And I'd see them like come back in, and really seeing individuals come back is a good sign for me to say, okay, we did something right here. Like we provide the environment that I'm hoping to provide. They feel like they're in a safe space where they can play games and or talk to other people that are other like-minded individuals that like to play games. So
great.
It's been very organic.
Yeah. We're going to do a quick reset here. You're listening to 90.7 KBOO Portland. If you're just tuning in, I'm Nate, here with James, and this is Winner's Bias, the show about the board gaming hobby. We're talking to Bert Hui of Columbia Gorge Board Game Group. So we already kind of talked about what types of games typically get played there, but where do they come from and who teaches them?
Sure. So the group, for the most part, I have a pretty sizable collection of games, and some of the earlier organizers also have a pretty sizable collection of games. And so typically, several of the individuals will just bring whatever they feel is going to be useful to play. I usually bring about 4 to 5 titles, and then if there's interest amongst the 20 odd individuals on any of those titles, I'll teach the game typically pretty quickly, and then set them aside and they'll just play. The space where we're at right now is a coffee house or a cafe. And there's one large table that sits roughly 12 to 14 people, and then otherwise there are tables that sit for between 4 and 5, I'd say. So typically when we have 20-odd individuals, we'll break up into all around the cafe to restaurant to really play games. But it's typically just individuals that bring their collections to play, and there's 3 or 4 of us that typically would do that. It's expanding, which is good to see also.
So you mentioned earlier that We'd like to dive a bit more into it about the tournaments and the demo and games. Can you tell us a little bit more about the demo and games at the conventions and how does that go?
Yeah, absolutely. I'd say demo and games was one of the things that I really enjoyed, and it was a big component to me organizing these the Columbia Gorge Board Game Group as far as teaching games is concerned. So the publisher I worked with when I got into hobby board game was Renegade Game Studios. Again, started working demoing for them from their outset. I had a friend who was asked to create a demo team, and my friend asked me if I want to join. I thought, sure, this is great. I love board gaming at this point. This is a great opportunity. When I go to big conventions and I represent the board game publisher, there's usually a table that I'm at, and for your Gen Con goers, your convention goers, you know, I will just allow individuals to sit down, let them play a couple of rounds of a game, give them a feel for a game, and really, it's oftentimes sort of a sales pitch, but I don't necessarily think of it that way. I often think of it as I'm trying to find a game that you may like or that you may not have heard of. And at that time, when I first started with Gen Con, with Renegade Games, it wasn't a situation that I felt like I was, again, making a sales pitch. I was of the opinion that individuals would generally like any type of game, and if you didn't, then you just hadn't found the right one yet. And so I would try to present a game in a way such that maybe that individual would like it, maybe they wouldn't. That usually involved talking about the theme of game. Typically discuss the theme of game first prior to discussing mechanics. And then because mechanics, you can kind of show what happens throughout the game. The theme is, in my opinion, generally more interesting to me. That's just my personal view. And so when I teach games, I typically talk about the theme first, and as you move people around, what that actually means, you know, in game context. Demoing, I think, was a great experience from the standpoint of just learning how to teach, and just because there's so many individuals at places like Gen Con, at Origins, I've been to PAX Unplugged, that you kind of develop the sense of of seeing whether or not a person that you're talking to is getting it or not, and if they're not getting it, then you just kind of change your tact as far as how you teach the game. And so for me, in trying to connect as individuals, which kind of goes back to community building again, it all kind of comes back to community building for me. I changed my tact as far as how I tried to teach the game, depending on, you know, whether or not I feel the person I'm talking to is getting it or not, or, you know, rocking the game. So that's a big part for me.
Yeah, that sounds like just great skills developed for running a board game group. The question I actually have for you is totally frivolous. I'm the king of frivolous questions. How do you not lose your voice over the course of a convention weekend talking over all the other noise? I've had a job where I had to do that often, and I was losing my voice all the time. So was that an issue for you?
It's not a frivolous question, despite what you may think. So common antidotes, I would say, for not losing your voice are taking mints and drinking lots of water. Water is especially important just because in the convention halls in your spaces, it's typically pretty warm anyway, so you want to stay hydrated. But lots of water, lots of and mints help actually quite a bit.
I'm not going to say this just because I'm English, but some tea and honey does great as well.
Yeah, tea and honey, I'm sure.
All things that I completely ignore throughout my day at my old job, where I was doing that all the time.
So you said a bit about the game and the demo and the publishers. So can you tell us a bit more about the tournaments that you said about the gaming tournaments that you used to judge?
Yeah, any different than, say, Magic the Gathering tournaments. That said, I haven't played Magic in a very long time, so I don't know what the tournament circuit is like anymore. But when I was judging tournaments for World of Warcraft, the trading card game, WoW TCG for short, I would travel around the country depending on the tournament size. And so we would have local regional tournaments here in Portland, actually. So I had a friend who ran events at Guardian Games. This is probably circa 2011, somewhere around there. And he would run WoW TCG tournaments, local tournaments at Guardian Games. And from there, because the three of us, this would be my friend who lives in Portland, and also my coworker who introduced me to WoW TCG. The three of us would travel around the country to much larger tournaments. They were either national or international tournaments. By international, I mean they were still housed in the United States, but there were international players that came from outside the country to the United States in order to play in a tournament. And it'd be a very, very much a team environment. The judges that were sort of brought in to help judge the tournament and effectively keep order. There's lots of different events, types of events that are going on at these tournaments. You would have a kind of standard, you would have a block tournament, which is a block of, a block would be, you know, for a given period of time, you'd have certain cards that you could play within your deck. And that would be the main draw for the particular tournament. But there would also be lots of different side tournaments as well, or smaller events, and judges would take part in those particular events as well, just to oversee that if there's a rules question, then judges were there to be able to answer them. If there's a dispute over whatever, then the judge would be there in order to try to resolve the dispute. But we all sort of worked as a team in order to make sure that the tournament went smoothly. There'd be a prize at the very end of cash prize at the very end of the tournament. In general, it was just great to, for me, it was great to be able to, with the game itself, be sort of a rules lawyer for the game. More importantly to me is the contacts and the individuals I've met just judging these tournaments. I know lots of people from around the country at this point who I am very happy to call my friends as a byproduct of really judging these tournaments and taking part in those events way back when.
That's awesome. What is the vibe of the tournaments like? Because I think, you know, board game meetups, that's a more casual thing. I know, like, when I get together with my friends, it's all about the casual. So what's the vibe like at a tournament when there's actual stakes on the line?
It's stiffer. It's definitely stiffer. There's definitely competitiveness. Sometimes there can be individuals that will, I won't say break the rules, but they will bend the rules as much as possible in order to give themselves an advantage. But it's definitely a much more competitive environment than it is playing a board game. For example, if I end up teaching heavy Euro, and the person before me takes their turn, you know, let's say the worker placement game where you're placing, you know, workers on an action space. If they put it on an action space and they think, oh no, I made a mistake. For me, I typically will say, okay, yeah, you can take it back and do something else. In a tournament-like setting, if that were to happen, I'd say that you're one and done. You don't have the opportunity to take a move back if you believe that you made a mistake. So very much more competitive than casual board gaming, regardless of how complex your board game that you're playing is.
Great. And like you're talking about, you have to know the rules. How deep do you have to go into like learning the rules and like edge cases that crop up? Like you're basically you're the judge, the umpire. Your word's final. Like how locked in do you have to be on the rules? And this will probably be the last question because we're going to be wrapping up here in a minute.
Okay. It depends on the game, obviously. But when you're playing a trading card game, I'd say that you have to be super locked into the rules. And it just so happened that when I used to play WoW TCG in Portland at Guardian, on the drive into Guardian Games, my friend would really ask me all these edge case questions, to not quite as a test, but almost like a bantering back and forth as far as what would you do in this situation. And on multiple situations, he actually found some rules breaking situations as we talked about various cards and their powers and how their interactions would work together. And I always appreciate that from the standpoint of, I never thought about that situation. And really, it kind of helped provide for me additional lateral thinking as far as how I would tackle a particular problem or what I would do on a future board game that I might play. You know, it's a very, very interesting moment to learn that for particular cards that have never been thought about to have an interaction with each other, you can actually have an interaction, and those interactions are not covered by a particular rule in the massive rule book that existed at the time.
All right, Bert. I think that's all we have time for now. Thank you so much for being here. We really appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Bert.
And thank you all for listening to Winner's Bias. If you would like to comment on the show, have any questions, or suggest discussion topics, you can email us at winnersbias@kbu.org, and you can find us on Instagram @winnersbias. I'm Nate.
And I'm James. We want to remind you that KBOO is a volunteer-powered community platform. That means we are funded by you, the listener. If you enjoy the program today, please consider showing your support by making a donation. Just go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Remember, it's
you are listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM and kboo.fm online.
Welcome to Boom Gaddis.